me welcome our speaker tonight. We have Paul from the Experience, Strength, and Hope home group in Bethlehem.
Sorry about that. Hello, everyone. My name is Paul Munchen. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
God, may the words be thine and the voice be mine. Amen. I share that prayer pretty much every time I speak. I try to ask God to speak through me. And it was here at this home group. This was my home group for close to 13 years. And about 4 years ago, we started a group up in Bethlehem, a one-hour speaker meeting in Bethlehem, Experience, Strength, and Hope, 429 East Broad Street in Bethlehem. We meet on Thursday evenings at 8 o'clock. If anybody's ever in Bethlehem, please stop by and join our meeting. May 28th, 2007 is my sobriety date. I had had a previous date, October 2nd of 2002. Today I don't believe, personally, I don't believe in relapse. My experience, is that we're not done until we're done. Period. You know, so, when I, spent about 2.5 years in this program, not drinking, not drugging, but not doing anything to change Paul. I feel like I should turn this way and look out that way too. I didn't do anything to change Paul. I didn't do anything to welcome this program of recovery into my life. I couldn't grasp the second step, even though I thought I was stuck on the third step. My sponsor, who I met here at Feet First, we'll call him Roy for sake of, that's his name, Roy. So Roy was my sponsor. I met him in this church and, didn't really know who he was at the time. Kicked over a coffee or his ice water or cold water or whatever it was, and I was like, you know, all scatterbrained. Oh, get that iron. He's like, relax, relax. And he's like, I look at him and he's just like glowing, just smiling and glowing. And I'm like, whoa, what's up with this guy? And got to know him a little bit and asked a couple people in the home group here about, you know, Roy and what they thought about asking him take me through the steps, and I got a raving yes from everybody that I spoke with, because he's an extremely spiritual person. Actually, he's a minister in today's world. And Roy and I found out that we worked about a mile away from each other down in Willow Grove. Go figure. Another coincidence in my life that I couldn't explain. And I explain it by God saying, you two would be good together. And I think that was the case because Roy took me through the 12 steps. And my life changed. Okay? It absolutely changed. The first time, I couldn't really do much because my ego and pride was still raging inside of me. And it just didn't work for me. Like I said, I spent 2.5 years, I call them my dry variety years. I didn't drink, I didn't drug, I went to lots and lots of meetings, and again, did nothing in the program. Until I came back after digging my hole a little deeper and thoroughly destroying my life. What happened then was I came back to AA knowing that there was a solution. And I hadn't been living it or in it. And I came back saying that I was going to do everything that was asked of me for the first time in my life. And That's what happened. You know, I made a commitment to myself, my God. Actually, Roy, our very first meeting, he said, I want you to sign a contract or have a verbal contract with me and God right now. And I'm like, anything. What is it? And he said that when I'm done taking you through these steps, these proposals, that you do it with other men. And I said, most definitely. More than willing. And we launched out on getting healthy, you know, becoming a sober member of society. And not perfect member of society. I'm not perfect in any way. I make mistakes all the time. But I took the fact that my life was absolutely coming apart at the seams. And for 3 years or 2.5 years, life was pretty darn good. But I couldn't do it, you know. I built this restaurant down the road from here. And when I started working on building that, I got away from AA. And, you know, I had more important things to do. And that was the mistake I made, you know. I'm busy. I got a case of the busies, you know. And I just stopped going to meetings, and everything comes back, you know. It just kind of weasels its way back in, cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, first it came in the form of a green plant, you know. I'm not drinking. Everything's cool. And it came in the form of a, you know, a white powder. I'm not drinking. Everything's cool. Didn't work that way. I picked up right where I left off, and it got worse for me. And it only lasted for about a good 6 months of using, relapse using, or, you know, getting done, is the way I like to look at it. And when Memorial Day came, 2007, the night before, I was having fun, so I thought. And that day, I showed up at my nephew's house up in Allentown with my 7-year-old son, actually 5-year-old son at the time. And Jason tossed me a Budweiser, and I caught it. He's like, "Hey, Uncle Paul," and he tossed me a Bud. I caught it. I looked at it, and for the first time, I felt this overwhelming honesty, like honesty and truth. Like, I just said, "Hey, Jay," and I tossed that Bud back, and he said, "What's up?" And I was like, "I'm done. I'm done." And that was it. That was the decision I made at that moment, standing in his garage, and I never turned back. I came back to AA, and I started seeking the people in AA that I was told the first time around by not so educated people in the program, "Stay away from those guys over there. All they do is talk about the big book. Big book thumpers." Well, turned out I needed a big book thumper in my life, because how long do I want to come to a 12-step program and never do the 12 steps is the question, you know? How long do I want to pretend? How long do I want to lie? How long do I want to cheat? How long do I want to steal? Peace, mind, monetary, doesn't matter. I stole my mother's peace of mind, my father's peace of mind all the time. You know, my ex-wife, Melissa, who today I have a better relationship, and I could say truly that I love her more today than I did when I was married to her. We have 3 incredibly beautiful children together. And the amount of pain and suffering I caused that woman, I wouldn't physically think about harming any man that did it to my daughter. But then I'd have to apply my principal program, and then I'd have to turn that over to God. But you old Paul, would a man treat my daughter the way I treated their mother? Nothing physical, it's just, Roy says to me, "Paul, did you ever cheat on your wife?" And I said, "No." And he starts laughing at me, and he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I never cheated on her. He goes, Paul, you had a love affair with drugs and alcohol the whole time you were with her. How did you not cheat on her? And those are the real hard truths that were exposed to me about Paul in that fourth and fifth step. I wrote everything on paper, and I left nothing out, you know. I know I jumped ahead here a little bit, but I'm jumping all over the place, because I'm, you know, even when we're living in this program, we could get torn up, you know, we could have life hit us right between the eyes, and it just puts us in a tailspin, and, you know, today has been a more difficult today. Now Rich is here. We lost a dear friend in our area, Dr. B, on Saturday, and he played a huge, huge role in my early sobriety. And he's moved on to bigger and better things. God has worked for him, obviously, in heaven, because there is no doubt in my mind he's a dancing angel, because he was a dancing angel here on earth. And it's kind of got me, like, you know, in a little twisted. Also, you know, I worked downtown Manhattan for almost 20 years of my life, and, you know, we just celebrated the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, and that alone puts me in this, like, unease of life, you know. It's nowhere near the way, it doesn't affect me anything like it used to, but, you know, I get into this unease. Like, you know, I was at the Penn State game, and Lisa's like, Paul, what's the matter? You're not even cheering. And I'm like, I'm cheering. I'm just sitting. You know, it was just being Paul, you know. I used to have a hard time just sitting still, and today I absolutely love it when I do it. I'm really jumping around. So Roy and I made that contract, and Roy and I set out, we start this program, and, you know, we sit down in his room, in his office, in his home, and we go through 1, 2, and 3, pretty much in about, I don't know, 3-hour period of time. And that's when he explained to me, Paul, you didn't have a problem with the third step your first time around. You had a problem with your second step. You know, coming to believe that a power greater than Paul. And that was the reality, you know. I had this mental obsession with myself. And I thought what I thought was right, always. No matter what. It was a horrible experience. 38 years of my life were living that way. Like, I was in overdrive, and I was on the highway to hell. Always, you know, just hop on in. And they said, the easiest direction to AA is head straight to hell and make a U-turn. And that day when I tossed that beer back to Jason, I made that U-turn. Came here, and I knew what I needed to do. I needed to find somebody, a sponsor, who's capable of taking me through the 12 steps. That was Roy. God bless me putting him right here in this meeting. God bless me with putting him right here. And then I followed the directions to the best of my ability, which at that point I had no ability really of following any directions, because I always knew better. I always knew the answer. I always had this craziness going on in my head that just told me I was always right. And wasn't until I got to this program that I was able to start to understand a little bit more of how I worked. And, you know, when we sat down, Roy and I, and did that 12th, that fifth step,
5.5 hours or so. I left there, and the world lifted off my shoulders. It wasn't all peaches and cream, and it took a little while, but I did have a burning bush experience not far from this meeting. I was on Route 309 when I had it. And, God has shown up for me always. My childhood, I could just count on two hands how many times I should have been dead. Close calls, 9/11 itself, I was taking my oldest daughter to her first day of preschool. Otherwise, I would have been 7 stories under when that first building dropped, which was the building I would have been in. And that really messed me up. But I never really kind of stepped back and said, thank you, God. You had me exactly where I was supposed to be. Because I didn't know anything about the fact that everything happens in God's world. And it's not a mistake, What do we see? What do we feel? How do we hear it? How do we perceive it? That's the thing. My perception of life was so twisted and so wrong as far as I'm concerned. I had a very wrong view of life. And God, thank you for this program, because it just gave me a new pair of glasses that I can see something that is so much greater than what I used to think was great, which was me. Like, just to look in this, do you see the sky today? I mean, there wasn't a cloud anywhere. That is the beauty that I could see today. Like, I couldn't see that beauty before, I used to go to the beach and, today I go to the beach and I just look, and I'm like, look at the beauty all around me. The mountains, beauty everywhere. I couldn't grasp that before. None of that mattered. It just didn't matter, Because I was always in yesterday or tomorrow. I was never living in the moment. And it was this program that delivered that to me, I grew up in organized religion, I went to Catholic school, got thrown out of Catholic school, went to public school. Put my children through Catholic school. But all this organized religion in my life never produced the freedom I have today that this program delivered to me through this process. I did this fifth step and I gave up, man. I was done. There was nothing I would not tell anybody about me today. Nothing. I'm free. And I got freed that day, but it took another week or so where I had asked Melissa if she would please go see Monsignor with me. Because our marriage was falling apart. And like I said, I had 3 beautiful children. I didn't want it to end. I was doing what I had to do to change me, but that change wasn't healing and couldn't heal the damage done. And it just didn't happen, and I had to accept it. As Roy says, Paul, Melissa has as much a right to be happy, joyous, and free as you do. And if that's without you, you have to accept that, You got to let her go. That's what ended up happening, what I ended up doing. But hearing these words, they're not easy words. We're not going to, this isn't a program to just, I don't coddle you. I won't coddle anybody. I speak the truth. Sometimes I'm harsh. But you know what? Death is harsh, as far as I'm concerned. Death is so much harsher than my words, I just kind of say it the way it is, man. I don't sugarcoat anything. I try not to anyway. And when I do, I start questioning, why am I doing it that way? That's not the way. That's not the reality in my life. The truth is the reality, But like I said, I had this religion in my life, but I never understood what spirituality was. I didn't have it. Like, I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it until I got here and it started coming from people. Like, I started seeing it in others, and I'm like, wow, look at this guy's hand. This girl, look what just happened to her. Look how happy she is. Well, this gentleman that we lost on Saturday, Dr. B, was the kind of man in my life that no matter what, he was always, always on an uptick, man. He was always hugging. He was always loving. And that's who I want to be. I'm not that way all the time, but I have this mentor, had this mentor that I could strive toward that. And that's going to be my strive. And that's my amends, you know, is to be that better person, a living amends to the world, to my family, to my children, to my ex, everybody, the person, people in my life today. You know, this program has given me the freedom to be Paul and to just love, you know, and have my own opinion, you know. So you're not going to love every one of my opinions, but, you know, I think that's the problem with the organized religion, you know. It's organized by human beings, so something's missing in all of them, I guess. You know, but this program took me to a different level, a level that I found happiness. I found freedom, you know, because God's been protecting me my whole life, and I'm able to see it now. You know, that morning in 9/11, man, my nephew pulled into the World Trade Center on the very last train, and they took his train out. They didn't let him off, and they took him out to Hoboken. I would have been one or two trains ahead of Jason. That's how I know where I would have been that morning. That wouldn't have been a good place to be, okay? And I'm here. Why am I here? Maybe there's one person here tonight that's going to hear something from me that's going to save their life or help them to get to the next level, you know. So having this truth fed to me by Roy, you know. Now, I wrote pages and pages of things, people, places, things, organizations, all these resentments, everything. I put everything on paper. I just wrote everything. And he turned every one of them around and made them my fault. Bastard. But that's the way it was. My perception was so far off that I couldn't see. And change that perception, change your life. You know, that's what it comes down to. And that's what happened for me. I can't be grateful enough for being here. I really can't. Because had I not made it, I really couldn't tell you where I'd be or if I'd be. You know, because that's how hard I was living. And that's how bad I was living and wrong I was living. You know. But I know today, I don't ever, ever have to live that way again. And I ask God, morning, afternoon, evening, to keep me on this path and to help His children, just like they helped me and help me. To this day, they help me. So, Roy and I, we get through this fifth step, and like I said, I didn't have this overwhelming burning bush experience. So I go to see my Monsignor. Melissa says to me, you know, I asked her if she would come with me to see my Monsignor. And she said, for what? And I said, well, how about our three children? And she just said, you know, it's too late for that, Paul. And that's when I just had to accept it. I went and saw my Monsignor, and I did a thorough fifth step with my Monsignor then. That afternoon, and I did it again. I just gave him everything, you know. I put it all on the table, and when I left there, and I was driving, I was begging God to take the pain. You know, my wife's divorcing me. You know, my life's in shambles. I'm dying inside. I need your help. Please give me a sign. Do anything. Just take this pain. You know? And I'm driving down 309. It's kind of rainy out. Only doing like 45 All of a sudden, I feel this pain going in my legs and comes up through my thighs, my stomach, and I felt like one of those movies, like a movie scene where you see the evil come out of like somebody, what's that little magician guy that goes to Hogwarts? Those movies, the Harry Potter movies, you know, those black guys floating around that time. That's what I felt like came out of me. And all of a sudden, I just had this complete, total ease come over my entire existence. And I was like, oh, wow. And all of a sudden, I felt whole. I wasn't crying anymore. I wasn't jumping up in joy, but I wasn't hurting. And it didn't last very long, you know, as it normally doesn't for us when we're in the world of pain. But we could continue to fight, so I did. I continued to fight. And another instance, I'm driving the turnpike. And I'm begging God for a sign, any sign, please, Lord, just give me a sign that you hear me, that you're here, that I'm on the right path, that I'm doing the right thing, anything, I'm crying, and I'm, you know, my wife's the kids, I have nowhere to live, I mean, I'm just like, and it's torrential downpour, and I'm driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike going to New Jersey, and I'm begging God, please, give me a sign. Now, I've been hunting my whole life, since I was like 9 or 10 years old. I started hunting, and I would never hunt doves in a torrential downpour. Why? Because birds don't fly in torrential downpours. Well, I'm begging God for a sign, and all of a sudden, up over the right-hand median comes a dove, and it flies right over the hood of my car. As I'm begging God for a sign that he hears me, that he's got me. Well, in that organized religion, the dove is a sign of love. And that dove flew over the hood of my car. And I knew I was in the right place. I knew I was doing the right thing. And I just had to keep moving and marching and getting through this trudge to the happy road of destiny. You know, I wasn't on it at that moment in time, but I was trudging for it and to it. And, you know, that was over 14 years ago, you know. And, gosh, what a beautiful life. So, Roy and I have to do 6 and 7. So we're sitting down at the gazebo at Penn Foundation. We do 6 and 7 while we're sitting in the gazebo, and the Thursday night meeting was going on. We didn't go into the meeting because we were doing this work. And we started out on my amends, and there were some challenges there. But the willingness has always been there, because that was there from that moment on. The willingness was there from that moment on to correct my past, to clean up my past, clean my side of the street, so many people say. So I started out on this venture, and I went to my mother and father's grave. I had wrote them a couple pages, and I went there and I did my fifth step with my mother and father, who had been gone. The amount of uncomfort, the pain and uncomfortness and worry and all of that I put them through for so long. You know, I know they see me now, and I'm sure they're very happy with how I carry myself today. My brother, same thing. He died of this disease, and I had to go to his grave and do the same with him. And I went to my sister's. Have a financial amends that I had to make with one of them that took me years to come to fruition. But that's a light at the end of the tunnel and a joy. And it's been 13 years that long. So, but it's coming to an end, and I thank God for that. My sister Susan, she's like, Paul, you never did anything to me. I said, I never did?
Yeah.
Do you remember the time I knocked you out? When you smacked me and I reacted by hitting you, which I knocked my sister out, and I would never, ever hit another woman from that point forward. I was only like 14. And I knocked her out on her bed, and I didn't know what to do. I was just like, she's like, I don't remember that. I'm like, good, good. I'm glad, because that's not who I am. You know, it was just a reaction. But, you know, that was her, that was inside of me, hurting me. And I made my amends with her about the way we grew up and how I used to steal her car all the time. You know, she'd wake up and her car would be gone. Her 14-year-old brother has it gallivanting down at the Whitehall Mall. You know. So, the amends process for me, in the way it's been explained to me, is I'm sorry means absolutely nothing in today's world. So, if that's what your mind tells you what an amends is, it's, mine is not. What I was instructed in amends is one, to set me free, but more so to set them free. And when I make my amends to people and individuals, I would approach them and I'd say, listen, the person I used to be, I am no longer. You know, I'm in a program that has helped me change my life. I know that when we were, you know, what should I use? I really don't want to use any of my amends as an example, but I know I did X, Y, and Z, and I know I hurt you in this way. It was never financial, but it was, you know, disrespect, very wrong. And I need to know what it is I can do to make that wrong right with you. And let them talk. And let them give the feedback. That's how my amends worked for me, and how I was walked through them by my sponsor. And most of my amends has worked really, really well. Two didn't even want to hear it. Melissa being one of them. She's like, Paul, I lived it. I don't need to hear it or be a part of it. Just go do what you're doing and keep doing it. That's the amends I need. And like I said, we have an incredible relationship today. But she wouldn't let me do it. She wouldn't allow it. So I read it to my sponsor. He said, just put it on paper and read it to me, and we'll call that quits. You know, there's not much more we can do because they have to be willing as well. I said, okay. And that happened with her mother as well, my ex-mother-in-law. Not much more I could do. I have two amends that are still open on me. One with a high school friend from many, many years ago. Well, I don't believe he cares to hear it because I reached out to him a half dozen times and he's never even responded. So, God willing, he'll be in my path someday in the future. And I have a work amends from when I was working on Wall Street. I have an amends to one of my ex-bosses. But I haven't been able to find Tommy. He lives in Connecticut and he kind of fell off the grid. So I got a few people and feelers out there. And like I said, when it's time, they'll be in my path. And I have to make the amends because he's in my path. I'm not gonna go drive around in Connecticut looking for him. I've been doing everything I can through people at work and stuff. But it'll happen someday, I'm sure. So we get through 9. I make my amends to the people on my list. Now I need to continue on a maintenance program. Sober maintenance program. See, for me to attain permanent sobriety, which is what I truly pray to God I currently have, is permanent sobriety. One word. Sobriety that where, when I step into my grave, I step into my grave sober. That's what I ask for. I ask for it all the time. Because if I don't ask, maybe I won't get it. So I ask, you know. So today, when I make mistakes, which I do, I rectify them as soon as possible, meaning immediately. I made a mistake just last week with one of my employees, and 5 minutes later, I walked up to him and I'm like, listen, man, I was so wrong the way I talked to you. You really upset me. But no one deserves to be talked to in any manner of rage or, you know, it was a very stressful situation and I blew up. My temper got the better of me. That's all I can tell you. And I had to make that right immediately. So I 5 minutes later, after I cooled down, and I was like, man, I went over to him. I'm like, Stephen, I was wrong. I was really wrong the way I spoke to him. And he's like, yeah, I know. So, but that, if I don't fix that right away, it's going to continue to happen. It might happen later that week with someone else, and then a week after that to someone else, and it'll just multiply on me. That's why if I don't stay current and I don't stay on my path, I can veer off. And see, the way I look at this is that I'm on this path and I'm heading that way. If I'm just off by 1 inch and I start walking, say I'm going 60 miles, if I'm off by 1 inch right here where I start, by the time I walk 60 miles, I'll probably be 15 miles away from where I wanted to be because of that 1 inch all the way back here. You know? And that, I use that as how my spiritual path. If I get off that spiritual path a little bit, in no time I could be in a blackout, Bill. You know what I mean? Like, I could end up so removed and in probably dark places and unhealthy places. So I have to continue to bring myself back to that center, to that the center of that path, that line. And that's by keeping anything I mess up, do wrong, I fix it right away. I ask God, how can I make this right? Can I make it right? Okay? So that's my 10th step on a regular basis. My 11th step, I pray every day and pretty much all day. I know some people kneel down to pray every morning and every evening. I kneel down and pray a lot, but I pray no matter where I am, you know. And I learned that early on because I was in so much pain when I came back in here 14 and a half years ago. I typed the Our Father, the entire Serenity Prayer. I don't know if you have the entire Serenity Prayer. We say four stanzas in our program. I ask that you Google the entire Serenity Prayer. And there's a total, I think, of 10 stanzas in that prayer. And it, living one day at a time, okay, our program tells us that. This is all we got right now. Enjoying one moment at a time, living in the moment. Accepting hardship as the pathway to peace. Taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have. Trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will. That I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. That's the entire Serenity Prayer. And I put that on paper. And I typed that. I typed the third step, the seventh step, the 11th step, and I put it in my printer, and I printed out a bunch of copies. I cut them into little pieces. I put them on my cabinets in the kitchen because I had three young children. I was constantly making breakfast, lunch, and dinner for them. So I was in the kitchen. I had my prayers on the cupboard. I had the prayers on the wall in my bathroom. I had my prayers on the visor of my car because I drove constantly. And wherever I was praying. Because I was hurt. I had nowhere else to go but to God. You know, I needed to get better. And I needed to stop thinking I was God. And that I made things happen. I didn't make anything happen, you know. I was just there to play along, you know. My vision was, it's my world and you're just lucky to be living in it, you know. And today, wholeheartedly, it's more your world than anyone's, you know. Today, I have brothers and sisters. I don't have animosity, fear, and discontent on a regular basis with people. I try to meditate regularly. It's been getting better. My brand sponsor, Al, is huge into the 11th step in the meditation. And I take it serious. Coming from him, I take it as a serious act for me to be participating in. So I've been working diligently on expanding my meditation, and it's been blossoming. And about a month and a half, you know, it was crazy because about 2 months before September's a horrible month for me. So July, August, I got all this stuff just coming at me, all just beautiful. I'm like, all day long, I'm like, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you. Like, I'm like, what is going on? I talk to my sponsor about it. I tell him how it's going on, you know, everything's. And then it ended. And then once it was over, now it was, September was right there. Now I'm in that ball of pain. And it was like, and that's the way it is for me. I don't know if it's that way for anybody else. And my roller coaster when I got here was like this. You know? I mean, I was high, I was low, I was high, I was low, and it was never in between. It was like shoot up, shoot down, man. Right to everything's great to everything's miserable. And today, my roller coaster goes like this. You know? I have my ups and downs. No real major up, no real major down. When I'm down, I just get quiet and I ask God to take the pain, let it flow. I gotta let it flow through. You know, pain is real and we gotta let it flow through. You know, I was never able to do that. I would act down. I would medicate. I wouldn't want that pain, so I medicated today. I just let the pain go through. I let the joys go through. I let the happiness. This is a path that it's so broad. There's room for every single one of these. But you gotta be willing, man. You gotta be willing to get on the path and follow some simple direction to deliver us to where we want to be, which is happy, joyous, and free. You know, so 12th step. I was asked to speak here. I get asked to speak in places. We used to do a lot of traveling here. When I was about 10 years ago, man, did we do a lot of stuff, man, here at the group. We used to travel, Big Dave and I, and we went all over the place. Speaking engagements, whatnot, and, you know, it still goes on to this day. Not to the severity and the amount that we used to do, but it still goes on, you know. We're in Connecticut. You know, we go, we're all over. We go wherever. We just travel. And I do it with a group, another group of guys, my sponsor and another couple guys. We all just kind of keep moving our feet, you know, wherever we get asked, we show up, you know, Scranton next week. It just got to keep going, you know, go with the flow. And that's what I do, you know, even though I own two businesses, I'm working 724, 365 practically, you know. I don't try to work on Sundays, but sometimes some things happen, you know, just can't handle it, can't not do everything. Anyway, so carrying the message is of the utmost importance to me. And recently, I've had this feeling because of everything that's gone on in the last year and a half, you know, especially with the amount of people that are dying, you know. We have people dying everywhere, and this disease isn't going to let up because of fear created about another thing, another illness, you know. So there's an illness out here, but we know the illness is here, and we can't treat it because it's just like very... very confusing to me how we could be so concerned about one thing but not the other that kills as many people on a regular basis. And so there's been a group of us that never stopped having meetings. We never stopped being in service. We had bonfires all year last year, outdoor bonfire meetings, and we tried to keep the message flowing. Because we don't want anyone to die, you know? And that's difficult. The amount of fear being produced is off the charts, you know? I spent the last 20 years of my life doing everything to change and not be living in fear of anything. And now I'm being forced to be in fear, and it's not comfortable. You know, it's just not comfortable. But it's reality at this moment in time, and I gotta accept it. So I do what I gotta do. You know, I just, the amount of traveling had ceased to be pretty much non-existent last year as far as meetings anywhere. And it was hard. It was mostly on the phone. You know, we got Zoom still open. Thank God for Zoom, you know. Because I've heard some wonderful success stories already that people made it to Zoom meetings and made things happen. And that's all. I'm so grateful for that. And the fact that this message is still being carried, even if it's on a teleprompter. I'm okay with that, but I like in person. I like having conversation. I like hugging. And that's my choice. So 12-step is something that has been a challenge lately as far as carrying that message, but we've been fighting to carry it to those that are willing to receive it, you know. And it's just it's just been a journey that doesn't ever have to end. Doesn't have to end for me until, you know, the end is near. You know, whenever God says it's near, I'm not gonna run. You know, I'm not gonna run. I know I survived the things I survived because it wasn't my time to go, and it's gonna continue to be that way in my life. Because my God's protected me forever, you know. From the day I was born, He told my mother and father, the day I was born, November 20th, 1964, they said to my mother and father, "We can only save one. Which one do you want it to be?" And both my mother and father said, "My mother." And here I am. So obviously there's been a plan, And I was trying to be in charge of that plan for over 38 years, and I didn't do very well. But since I got here, I don't know. I don't know how well I'm doing. All I know is I don't drink, I don't drug, I don't think about drinking, I don't think about drugging. The obsession has been removed, the 10-step promises have come true in my life. The fellowship around me has grown immensely. The amount of friends I have across this country is off the charts. And I'm free. I'm free because of a simple program that took 164 pages to relay that message to us brothers and sisters. That bee keeps popping into my head. Love you, bee. I was in a world of pain one day. This was like right in the very beginning. I think before I was even here. And I couldn't. I'm calling people. Nobody's answering. It's during the day. People are working, you know, which is understandable. That's what happens. You know, we all get better and get back into life. And not everybody can pick up at any given moment. Well, that bee picks up, and I started like, and he's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "Down at my house right now." And he's like, "Well, come meet me." So I met him at a place down in Bucks County, and he just sat with me for like an hour and a half until I got off that ledge. You know, I'll never forget it. And I thank God I was able to talk to him about that story not long ago, and to thank him then for it. Because all he did was spend 2.5 hours with me, but they were 2.5 hours that I didn't know what was going to happen next. I was scared. I was still running, not drugging or drinking, but I was not relieved. I was not relieved from the obsession. And he held my hand that day. And that's what we're here for. We're here to hold each other's hands. We're here to show you how we do this. How they did it, how it was done with us, and we relay that to you, and that's the best for all of us. As long as we're working out of this book and following this direction, I don't think rarely has a person failed who has thoroughly followed our path. I think that word was one of the words that was changed before it went to print, because I think it was a harder word, a more specific word than rarely. I think it was that if you do what we do, your chances are 100% to succeed. That's the bottom line. Do what we do, the way we do it, the way it's outlined, and your chances are pretty much 100% success. You know, but if you skimp and you don't want to do it, half veils avail us nothing. It tells us that. I mean, this book is full of so much information. One of the main turning points when I got back here, I was at a big book study, and Fred R. held up the book, and on the front cover, right here on the sleeve, it says, "This is the fourth edition of the big book, the basic test of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he held it up and he said, "A textbook is a book to be studied. A novel is a book to be read." And when he said that, I got goosebumps right now. That was like, you know, you ever walk across a floor in a creaky floor and there's that light bulb that's just not screwed in all the way, you know, and you hit the one board and the light flickers. That's how I was living my whole life. My light was not screwed in. And that day, when Fred said that, my light bulb got screwed in, and I never stopped believing that this is going to work in my life. The big book is a textbook, and a textbook is a book meant to be studied. Amen. Thanks for letting me share.